What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the very first inaugural episode of The Sports Hour. I'm Peyton Taylor, alongside a large cast of characters that you're going to get to know. It's going to be a fun time. Grady Gardner, Buzz Gardner, Obi Leach, and Chuck Spencer. What's going on, guys? I guess we'll do this one at a time. Grady, what's up, man?
I'm doing good, brother. Glad to finally get on this thing and get it going. We've been talking about this for about 2 years since we've been at Ole Miss, so I'm just glad to be able to finally get it going.
Toby.
Oh, man, you know, I'm so glad and really, really excited for this, man. Like you said, we've been talking about it, and I'm just glad we can finally get the show on the road, per se.
Chuck, let's hear from you.
I'm just stoked, excited, and I'm fired up about it. I'm ready to talk some sports and hopefully give the people what they want.
And then the man a few words, Buzz, let's hear it.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. I mean, I've heard y'all talk about this a long time, and just glad I can be a part of it.
Oh, yeah. Now, I hope y'all are excited for this. It's going to be a revolving door all the time. We're having different people on. Hopefully have some special guests in the future. It's going to be an exciting time. But today, first episode, 2 days removed from the college football playoff national championship. And, guys, let's just recap the season. You know, Georgia wins, beats Alabama 33-18 and a game that, you know, kind of flipped on its head. It was all you could see in the first half was everybody talking about how boring the All-SEC final was. And then in the second half, really, I thought might have been one of the most entertaining finishes to the national championship game in quite a while. But, you know, let me hear from some of you guys. What do y'all think?
Well, like you said, the first half was sort of a lull. I mean, they saw the picture of Uga in the kennel. He was sitting there sort of just taking a nap, and everybody sort of reposting it saying how boring it was. But with the second half, I could say that was probably one of the top five games of the whole season. I was really pleased with how well Stetson came down the stretch. I mean, he made two key throws down the stretch where they ended up coming back and winning the game, where he fumbled that ball with, I think, about 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. I thought it was over with. I thought they had no chance. But him making two key throws down the stretch and winning the game for him, you couldn't ask a lot more from a guy that was initially a walk-on.
Yeah, first half, that's Pat McAfee's game. He loves it, just kicks and punts. I bet he was loving it.
Oh, yeah, man. For me especially, like, I like some defensive struggles, but as it got toward in the second half when they kind of started opening up and the playbooks on both sides kind of opened up and they actually were starting to drive and move the football, it got really entertaining. But that first half, you know, those first couple drives were ending the field goal. I was just like, you know, like, man, this could go either way. And it was one of those games that kept me on my toes. I didn't really expect who was going to win. And I think the team that America wanted to win got it done, and I'm glad they did.
Yeah, I was really just proud for Stetson Bennett, really, because I was one of the people who had said throughout the season that, you know, he's not an elite quarterback. You can't win a national championship with a quarterback that's not elite. And just to – to see him prove me and really the whole country wrong was really awesome.
Yeah, no, and that was obviously the talk of about the entire game. And it, heck, I've been talking about, you know, obviously unsatisfied fans saying, oh, you think JT leads us to 15-0. Let me hear from you guys. I mean, JT obviously probably has a lot more natural talent than Stetson, but that first game against Clemson looks really rough. Obviously, Clemson's a great defense this year, but I mean, how different do you think that game last night really goes with JT?
Well, the first thing that I want to bring up, Peyton and I, Northeast Tigers stand up, but Mississippi JUCO creates some monsters. And I have to say that Stetson Bennett, being from Jones County Junior College, became a monster down there and changed his whole life and came back to Georgia after his, I guess, sophomore season, won a scholarship and then became the guy he was at Georgia. I mean, through that hardship and through the struggles, he came back to Georgia. I mean, I knew that Kirby Smart probably saw that dog in him, and he won the title for him. I know JT Daniels, like you said, is a five-star talent, but at the end of the day, it matters who's the guy that's going to win it for us. Even he said after the game, Stetson did, he said, I know I'm the best cornerback, and he knew that he could get it done.
Yeah, coming off that, you know, I think Stetson Bennett, you know, he kind of proved the haters wrong in a sense, but I think, you know, with JT, if you would have played with him, I think the playbook could have been there where you could have opened it up a little bit more, but I think Stetson, for what he showed and what he could do, is that he gave you that that little ump that, you know, we're playing to prove the guys wrong, that we want to win with this quarterback because we think that he has the ability and the mindset that he can lead us to a championship. And all throughout the year, people kind of underrated him a little bit. I was one of the ones that did. I was like, this guy I don't think's it. But, you know, he proved me wrong as he just kind of locked in. And really the game was his, just on both sides of the football. When it come back to offense, you know, he was locked in and he didn't really make any bad decisions that I think could have not came from him. And I think it just was overall just a really good play, like plan that they had from him.
I would like to have seen Georgia's offensive coordinator call some more screen passes, especially in the first half. Stetson Bennett didn't have time. He was pressured every snap. It felt like he dropped back. I think a few more screens would have slowed that down, if not at all, maybe score a couple more touchdowns early on.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a weird thing because it seemed like, especially Georgia, you know, it ran the ball effectively about the whole game. In the first half, not as much, but in the second game, it really seemed like they just committed to the run game, building that behind Stetson. Obviously, Stetson in the fourth quarter going 4 for 4, you know, hitting deep bomb after deep bomb, helped open up the running game. But, man, it really just seemed like Georgia was just getting away what's worked for them all season, which was a dominant run game and then leaning back on the defense. It seemed like they were, like y'all said earlier, very vanilla Bill O'Brien the same way with Alabama. Honestly, in the first half, you look at it, I just don't think they set up either of their guys to really, really succeed.
Today on Colin Cowherd on The Herd, they were talking about Joel Klatt was talking about how Bill O'Brien's play call was so vanilla with that. There was no misdirection in their run game. I mean, they just ran straight runs like they're in high school. In Division I, especially in the national championship game, with such vanilla play call, especially in the run game, with a defense like Georgia that has only given up like 10.1 total points per game this whole year, it's hard to overcome something like that.
Yeah, I would say too that you could tell like Georgia really they really went back and watched the film from the SEC championship because the defense looked like it was out of control. Like they were all over the field. They were making tackles in the SEC championship. They weren't making those plays. So you can tell they adjusted to what they did in the first game.
Yeah, I think Kirby Smart. I'm guessing during practice and the build up and all that film watching that he really had to buckle down that defense. That you had to be there to help your brother out. You know, if you're having these one-on-one tackles, you know, sometimes it takes more than one to tackle, especially an Alabama running back. So it definitely showed that they preached that they, you know, they kind of have to combine together to get these guys down. And it looked like it worked for them really all game. It really, from a defensive, like, standpoint looking, that was one of the best defensive called games I think I've watched in a long time.
Sort of going off what you're saying too, Toby, after the SEC championship game, they got whipped like a redheaded stepchild. I mean, in every facet of the game, I mean, offensively, defensively, special teams, they stand a chance against Alabama. They just – it seemed like they came out ready to play. And Georgia saw that, and they came out with a chip on their shoulder, came to play hard, came to bring the pressure on defense and the ground and pound and play their game on offense and run the ball. And that showed itself as the game went along on Monday night.
I just got to say, James Cook is a beast. That's all I got to say on that one.
No, yeah, Cook and Zamir White had huge games. But really what I look at is the key. We talked about the defense. When you go, you know, they kept saying 37 days ago from the national championship, Alabama beat Georgia. Bryce Young, you know, showed the best game he had all season, looked like the Heisman winner that he was crowned a few days later, just sliced through that Georgia defense, did whatever he wanted. And then last night, Kirk and Chris talked about it after the game, whether it was scheme or whether it was just Georgia getting after it, winning one-on-one battles, which is what Kirk pointed out big at the defensive line and at the front seven. They just made Bryce look uncomfortable all night. Really, I mean, maybe his worst outing of the season made him just – look completely uncomfortable. And I know you lose Jamison early in the game. That was huge. And you're without Mechie already, losing him against in the SEC championship. But man, just really made him look uncomfortable running a bunch of stunts, running different kinds of blitzes, and just it almost felt like they didn't let Bryce see the same look on defense all night two times.
Well, going off that, it in a lot of cases, Bryce Young, like, he looked like he was ready to go, but he never felt truly comfortable. Even after losing those guys early, you know, he made a bunch of, like, throws that were just so overthrown, especially the interception when he had overthrew him by, what, 5-10 yards. It's just like he never – like, early on, he felt comfortable, but after that first quarter, he can never, like, never settle back in, if that makes sense. He can never settle back in and find his footing really, really well, especially because Georgia was just bringing the heat all night.
Yeah, and I mean, and Bryce, I mean, you look at it, Toby, and this is a guy that had been extremely efficient all year. I mean, 46 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, and he throws – nearly half of his interception output all season last night. And just, again, never looked comfortable. Even in the third short situations, Georgia just found a way to get pressure and really took away. When Jamison went out and without Mechie, they stopped taking those shots down the field that Alabama has been – that's made, you know, Bryce Young look so comfortable. You know, the line couldn't give him time against Georgia consistently. And then you look and the short passing and Georgia just took that away. And it really made Alabama one-dimensional throughout the entire night, having to rely on the run game that, again, against a front seven so talented like Georgia, it's just not going to work out for you.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of people say – on Twitter, Instagram, everything that, you know, if Alabama had the receivers, they would have won. And I'm like, well, the backups are 5 stars too. Like, yeah. Alabama's backups are 5 stars. So I don't – like, obviously it's hard to replace that chemistry and, you know, that. But the talent was there for Alabama. I mean, they have guys waiting for their opportunity. So I don't really like that excuse because I feel like Georgia just outplayed them all night, regardless of who was in there and who wasn't.
That's a great point.
It just seems like coming off a huge win against Cincinnati that Alabama, I guess I'm in a way say they kind of blew their load against Cincinnati and just didn't come out really offensively effective. And I don't know really why that could have happened. I guess when you prepare for a weaker defense in Cincinnati and then you kind of forget just how good Georgia's defense is.
Well, and Toby, let's pivot off that for a second because going at it anyway, you know, you talk about looking back at the college football playoff and more of a, you know, a large spectrum. Cincinnati obviously made waves, first group of 5 team this year, and then they, you know, they play Alabama in a game that the score is tighter than the actual game was. If you watch that, Alabama had control from the opening whistle, it seemed like. But, you know, what do you think, even still in that game, Alabama didn't look quite too comfortable when they were throwing the football. You know, it was really where they ran it. I mean, Brian Robinson got everything he wanted. So, I mean, what do you think really was what made Alabama so uncomfortable from, you know, where they were shredding through the Georgia's defense in the SEC championship to a month later, they can't put together really a coherent passing game?
You know, I can't say it's pressure because it's Nick Saban in Alabama and they've been here before. But it just
I can give you an answer. And it's one simple sentence, and all it is it's just a talent level so different, in all honesty. I feel with Alabama and Cincinnati.
Well, you can say that too. When it comes down to it, is that, you know, you come off an SEC West schedule where you're playing the best talent in the country. You come off an SEC championship where you dominate, you play really well. And then you got to prepare for a team that you've never seen before, that you've never really played a team like that. So to come from that and then have to go straight back into that tough SEC opponent that you know is going to grind you out, I guess it's really, really could be difficult to kind of calm the players down and say, hey, you know, you're coming off this, and now you got to prepare for the Iron Giant, per se.
I think the biggest, like, because they kind of, like, the passing game, you said, struggled. So I think the main reason for that is just the lack of reps and chemistry, like, Bryce Young had with the backup wide receivers. Because when they're practicing, he's getting reps with, like, the first string, building that chemistry. So, like, if somebody's running – if one of the backups is running a route down the field and he sees leverage from the corner at a certain spot and the safety over the middle instead of over the top, well, maybe Mechie, maybe – he breaks it down, comes back while the backup just keeps going. And then Bryce Young throws what he thought he was going to run. He runs something else. I think it's just chalk it up to lack of playing time with each other in a game setting.
Well, and one thing I want to, you know, give credit to Cincinnati to in that looking in that game is their offense obviously struggled against a defense like Alabama's, you know, and the talent discrepancy. That was where it really was noticeable to me with Cincinnati's offense versus Alabama's defense. Cincinnati's defense has got legit players on that side of the ball. Sauce Gardner, Kobe Bryant, others. I mean, this is a team, this is a defense that is a top 20 in the nation in third down percentage allowed, only allowing 33% of the third downs this year. So, I mean, this is a team that has a lot of speed on the defensive side of the ball, really good in the secondary. So, you know, I think that could have attributed to it some because Cincinnati in the back end was very talented and very experienced this year.
Well, the guy or a name like Kobe Bryant, you better bring it, though.
Especially if you wear his number.
Exactly.
Does he wear his number?
I think he did for the playoff game.
Right.
Okay. I didn't know. I couldn't remember that. That's pretty awesome.
He was like the cornerback of the year, wasn't he? He got the award.
Yeah, he was Thorpe up there. Award. Heck, Cincinnati, you look at it, looking at it now, they're the second best defense in the nation against the pass, only allowing 169 yards per game. Better than Georgia, who's at 13, only allowing 190. So, I mean, this Cincinnati team, like I said, really gave – and you wonder if maybe that's the trouble because you look at it and Georgia, after Georgia, Texas A&M, the game that Bama lost – was the next best team against the pass at 192 yards a game. You go from there all the way down. It was Florida at 25, another close game. So you really wonder if maybe it was just a component of Alabama this year playing some softer passing defenses, and then you get to the playoffs and you're playing two of the top 15 defenses against the pass.
Yeah, I mean, that does make sense. And I think early on, you know, Alabama, they wanted to establish the run. And when they got some success, you know, they've been doing it all year, run the football, make success, Bryce Young can throw the football. But it never really was able to set up that they could do that effectively like they had been doing all season.
Yeah, no, I think for sure you're right about that, Toby, especially when you try to establish the run against a team like Georgia, who's allowing 79 yards per game rushing the football, 2.5 yards at rush. When you have to run the ball to establish the passing game, which I think against a good defense, you have to play, you know, you hear it a lot, complementary offense. You have to run the ball to be able to throw the ball effectively and vice versa. And last night, Alabama couldn't get either going. Georgia, what really opened up in for them in the fourth quarter is Alabama had to respect the run. They had to bring those guys down the box. And, you know, I think against both Cincinnati and Georgia in the playoffs, they had trouble, you know, they had trouble throwing the football against good defense, especially against Georgia, not being able to establish the run.
Yeah. Also, coming off where you said teams that allow passing, you know, one of the best passing defenses, sitting there is Washington. You would have never would have thought Washington would be one of the best defensive teams in the country when it comes against the pass.
No, you wouldn't think that at all. But so now let's take it a little bit, you know, a little bit further out. Let's talk about maybe a little bit of our, you know, just college football as a whole as we wrap it up. And, you know, it's a sad time, obviously, and maybe, you know, focus on, we know where we all want to focus at and we'll get there. But really, let's start it out. Let's start some widespread questions. Biggest surprise of the college football season for you? Go.
Will Anderson not getting invited to New York?
Matt Corral not getting invited to New York.
Well, don't even get me started. Right.
That's for the next segment when we go to it, I guess.
All right, yeah, you're going to have to cut this part. But I couldn't hear what you said, Peyton.
Oh, I was saying biggest surprise of the college football season.
For the good, I'll say Ole Miss. I mean, I was very surprised by them. For bad, it was LSU. But go ahead, Chuck.
The biggest surprise for me is Arkansas. Jefferson. That's my biggest surprise.
I agree.
Dude's a baller.
Sam Williams being one of the best defensive players in the country. I mean, that really surprised me.
It really surprised me. Auburn, I think, was 6-1 at one point, and I think they finished, 6-7? So I was so surprised how they added that end of their season because they were a top SEC West team at one point. They beat Ole Miss. So it really surprised me of their downfall.
I think another one too is kind of a coming with the bad is Oregon as a whole. You know, starting off the season really well and then just getting utterly destroyed, you know, back half of the season.
Yeah, Tennessee's quarterback. He's going to be a handful next year. He's going to be one of the top in the SEC. Maybe the top in the whole SEC East. I don't know, but he's going to be a name we're going to hear a lot more next year, I believe.
You know, y'all talking about all these different things. For me, mine would probably just be the parity in college football this season, down from the 1 and 2. You know, from Georgia and Alabama, who we kind of felt like all the way back in September were the clear-cut two best teams in football, and maybe Ohio State right behind them. It really felt like this year, more than years and so in the past, anybody can step onto any field and beat any other team, you know, on a given day.
And that's one thing that I've loved about college football recently, because, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, we didn't really have that. We had 1 and 2 and nobody else. But this year, for sure, it does look like that college football is kind of expanding in a direction where, you know, there may just be 1 and 2 teams that are still super good, and they're the ones that beats. But, you know, you're 3 to 10, you're 3 to 25, you know, you could interchange those, and we really don't know who's going to be the best team out of 3 to 25. And I think that comes with the portal as well. It's like everybody can transfer anywhere, and it's basically making it where talent can be spread across the board, and you never can really have clear-cut guys because they can always change teams and make your team just a little bit better.
Yeah, I don't think we're ever going to see the Alabama running back room we saw a couple years ago with Derrick Henry, Alvin Kamara, and there's so many I don't even know. I don't think we're going to see too much more of that college football.
No, Chuck, I think you're definitely right. With the transfer portal and everything moving, you're not going to see stuff like that anymore. And you look at, you know, the AP Top 25 is released today, the final one, and you look at, you know, San Diego State 25, Utah State at 24, NC State at 20, Houston at 17, Wake Forest at 15, Pittsburgh at 13, Utah at 12, Ole Miss at 11, Baylor at 5, Cincinnati at 4. These are teams that you're not used to seeing in these positions, and it really crazy. You know, you see Texas A&M drop out of the rankings completely, a team that had been really good all year. Wisconsin not there in the final rankings. It just a crazy year in which we're seeing teams that, you know, broke the mold. Big, you know, looking at it, biggest surprise, we're talking about biggest surprise. Anybody else shocked by how Pittsburgh was this year?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
100%.
I mean, it was their conference to lose. It really was.
Pittsburgh, yeah, and Spencer Rattler taking a seat about week 5 or 6 at Oklahoma was a pretty big surprise, too, to Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you got Caleb Williams sitting there. You got to play him, but I don't really understand that at the moment. You know, I love Spencer Rattler. Spencer Rattler, guy, and he's going to do great things at South Carolina. But in my opinion, he was the dude, and I think they should have wrote him out, in my opinion.
Yeah. And another team that a lot of people are forgetting about is one of my biggest surprises is Clemson. You know, they came in, I think, ranked number 2 or 3 in the nation, and he had DJ, the 5-star quarterback. Everybody thought he's the next Trevor Lawrence, and it was sort of a disappointing season for Clemson, you know, just from where they've been the past few seasons, making the playoffs, winning national championships. I mean, I say disappointing season. They still won 10 games, but not for their standards. I think Clemson was sort of a surprise to everyone.
And I think piggybacking off that, when you talked about that, I always think of that video that come out with Dabo talking to that dude, and he's like, "This is where you're going to throw touchdowns at," and he went 3 games without throwing a touchdown. So yeah.
He did throw a touchdown, but it was to Georgia, wrong team.
that sums up Clemson's season right there.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy when a program gets so high that you have a 10-win season, you're complaining that it's a down year, and it's just it really speaks to what Dabo has built there. And you know, we talk about the parity, and, you know, I mentioned Pittsburgh, and here's one thing, you know, that a lot of this discussion around the college football season ended up at the Heisman, you know, the Heisman race ended up with Aiden Hutchinson, Kenny Pickett, Bryce Young, and with C.J. Stroud, who ended up in –
Right.
Yeah, that was the 4 that ended up there. And I may get y'all going with this one. you know, obviously we're Ole Miss fans. A lot of us, you know, a lot of Ole Miss fans upset the crowd didn't make it. That's the area we live in. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I think Kenny Pickett deserved it over Corral. As much as I love Corral, I think he deserved it over Corral this season.
I'll rebuttal over you in a minute. Just give me a minute, but we'll get there.
Oh, okay, so you got something to say.
I've got some stats for you, but we'll get there.
I can say Kenny Pickett for what they did, you know, Pittsburgh really coming off, you know, kind of out of nowhere and being such a good team. But if you're going to say that and they built a team that, you know, shouldn't really have been there and they were there this year, Matt Corral did the exact same thing at Ole Miss, you know, a team that should not have won 10 games. We won 10. And the only reason we won 10 is because Matt Corral is our quarterback this year. And that's what I got to say on that.
Well, and I mean, I will say this. I mean, you know, Pickett threw the ball over 100 times more than Corral, but you look at it and it really comes down to, you know, what do you see the Heisman as? And obviously I'm looking at it like the MVP of right. college football, which right. is to me, an MVP is who was the most important to their team success. And overall, Pittsburgh ends up winning a conference championship and Ole Miss doesn't. You know, Pickett's at the forefront of that. Pickett finishes with more yards, more passing touchdowns. I just feel like that was, you know, Kenny Pickett definitely deserved to be there. If you're going to take somebody out for me, I'm taking out C.J. Stroud. And I know Stroud had a great year, but you're talking about a guy who, in a win and get in basically for the college football playoff, laid an egg against Michigan. And you know, his offense couldn't get that done. Obviously, the defense gave up a ton too. But, you know, lose on that big stage. And besides Michigan State, really just didn't see him, you know, have a great showing against fantastic competition this year.
I'm not going to make excuses for him, but the big house with 100,000 people in it and it's 20 degrees and snowing, I mean, they're going to put your name up in the – they're going to build a statue of you if you come out and win in that game. I mean, everything was against him. I mean, I couldn't believe that they were in that game from the beginning, but I do agree with you, though, with the C.J. Stroud synopsis.
And I'm not taking – big- away from him. C.J. Stroud's a good player either. We're not taking it in the way, but I agree.
Another big venue to play at is Neyland Stadium, Tennessee, when the ex-head coach comes back, 100,000 people there screaming, throwing stuff on the field.
You get Matt carted.
Crowell rose to the equation.
You get carted out. You get carted out, taken out of the game, not supposed to come back in. You come back, and I can't remember. Did he throw a touchdown on the drive? I can't remember.
I don't know.
But it's something like I can't remember. But
yeah. He ran one in. He came back and ran it in on his bad ankle.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, and when we look at Heisman, it's crazy to me because the Heisman now is – you can make the argument all day long it's the best player in the country. But sometimes, you know, the Heisman voting, they'll look at the best team, and sometimes they'll pick the best player from that best team. And I hate that it's like that, but we have seen it like that. But you know, we always talk about these Heisman moments, and if that's not a Heisman moment, I don't believe nothing could be a Heisman moment.
Right.
The only thing that could have been bigger is if the Rebs beat Auburn after Corral comes back after leaving the field and going to the locker room for whatever reason. My biggest thing is, correct me if I'm wrong, but did Matt Corral not win the fan vote for Heisman?
He did.
When's the last time a Heisman candidate won the fan vote? But didn't make New York, wasn't able to go to New York.
That's a great point.
Well, with the Heisman voting, I wish it was kind of like, you know, kind of like how the All-Star game is, where the fans, you know, have a big, like, big proponent to that, where they like, their vote really matters to get them guys there. So even if, you know, Matt Corral wouldn't have won it, it would have been nice if the fan vote would have been taken on and they said, okay, let's at least send this guy to New York.
I'm going to disagree with that, you know, because you look at the All-Star, and we're talking about college here, but when you're talking about a player's legacy, the Heisman is obviously the biggest award you can win in college. You win a Heisman, and you're locked into the College Football Hall of Fame. Can we all agree on that?
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. Yes. So in an All-Star game, you've got Klay Thompson near the top of the leaderboard in the NBA this year, who just came back to play his first few minutes on Sunday, and he's fourth in the West in All-Star votes. Awards of that prestige up to players or to fans, it diminishes the value of it.
Well, it doesn't even have to be where it matters completely, but it should be where the Heisman voters should recognize that these fans are picking this player for a reason, not just because they want to pick him, but because they see how talented and how good he is.
I mean, there's 2 million people in Mississippi. I mean, it has to be more than people from Mississippi voting for Matt Corral.
Exactly. Come on.
Yeah.
Well, and it is. It is. But where is the line drawn? I mean, that's just one thing, because I just – at that point, I feel like
– We need an electoral college of Heisman Trophy winners.
Mississippi gets one vote.
Yeah, that's a hell, man.
But California gets 50.
But it becomes –
The real question is –
Go ahead,
the real question is, does the District of Columbia get a vote for the Heisman?
No, they do not.
No.
Zero votes.
Zero votes.
With a team like Washington football team, you don't get a vote.
What about Puerto Rico?
No, they're not a state.
Yes, Apropos is there. No, did he? No. Yadier Molina did. I know. So, yeah, they get a vote. Go ahead,
What I was saying, it just to me, the Heisman, look, Corral had an amazing year. Y'all know I love Matt Corral, obviously, but the stats don't justify it. I know he's important to Ole Miss this year, obviously. He's the only reason we sniff of New Year's Six Bowl. Right. But there has to be a line drawn when you're talking about, you know, how fans have an impact in Heisman voting, because, again, I'm always going to point back to dumb examples, like, for instance, Zaza Pachulia almost being an all-star 5 years ago because the fans had him number one in the West in all-star votes. So there, it takes away the prestige of an award if you're letting fans who can go vote for their favorite player or go vote for a meme or go vote for, you know, the worst player in the league, because there's going to be guys that do that. And if, you know, the day social media, that can get a huge following. And then you're talking about sending a guy to New York. And Matt Corral is more deserving than others, but I'm saying as a whole, you know, eventually you're going to have a guy that's sent to New York that obviously doesn't deserve to be on that stage.
Yeah, but the winner of the whole thing outright, and him not being able to go to New York, I think that itself kind of waters down the award a little bit, not for Bryce Young by any means, and not for winners, but, like, the seriousness of, like, Hutchinson being – above Corral. Maybe they just didn't want three quarterbacks as a finalist or something. I don't know, but it's
– Well, I mean, Hutchinson, he's a great player. Like, he did a lot
he
of
– He is, games. And I'm not trying to take anything away from him. But
if we're going to talk about defensive guys, Will Anderson should have been there over him, and it shouldn't have been close.
Yeah. The reason why he went was because he had, like, two or three sacks against Ohio State in the game. I mean, it was just because of that one game is why he got sent to New York.
Take two sacks in one game over, what, 18 over an SEC schedule? I'm taking the SEC schedule over two games against Ohio State any day of the week.
I mean, you look at the point of that. I mean, Will has 49 more tackles, 3.5 more sacks for more yardage, same amount of passes defended. The only thing is Aiden Hutchinson forces two fumbles, Will Anderson doesn't. But to me, you know, this is nowhere near what, you know, I don't get how you keep in my opinion, the best player on the best team out of New York.
Yeah, and I agree with that 100%, because Will Anderson is the best player on Alabama. And we can argue all day long that Bryce Young is, because he won the Heisman, but when you are a guy that is anchoring a whole defense and doing what he is doing, that's the best player in the country. Without him, that Alabama defense, you know, yeah, you could say they're full of talent, but without that anchor like him, would they really be as efficient as they are now, or what they was before Georgia last night?
Yeah, and Will Anderson doesn't need receivers to make him good. I'm not saying Bryce Young's like the receivers make Bryce Young, but Bryce Young, he needs talent around him. Last night, you could tell he needed those guys. He needed his receivers. Will Anderson, he doesn't need He's talented enough by himself. Obviously, the defenders around him help, but he doesn't need other guys like Bryce Young does.
I mean, if we're going off stats, you know, and I hate to be that person because I can't stand their fans, but, you know, you look at Mississippi State fans and say, Will Rogers should have been over there over C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
I mean, and I can't stand Will Rogers and I can't stand Mississippi State, but, you know, looking at the stats.
He had eight top 50 receivers in the SEC, too, though. He had a bunch of targets to throw to. unlike Matt Corral, but I'll get to that in a minute, Peyton. I'm coming for you.
Well, Will Rogers also threw the ball 95 times a game. I could lead the SEC in passing yards if I could throw the ball 95 times a game.
They were last in rushing in SEC at 14. Also, that's just the air raid.
I'd also lead the country in interceptions and probably fumbles.
Here's the thing: you got to when you're looking at an air raid offense. You know, Rodgers throws 36 touchdowns, nearly 5,000 yards. It's 74% complete percentage. That's, you know, obviously great, but you're talking about the second most attempts in the nation at 683, only three behind the second guy. Took 34 sacks, and his in terms of quarterback ranking rating, he's the 50th best in quarterback rating in the country.
Toby's a dual threat, just to go back to that point. But anyways, continue.
I am a dual threat, yes. I am a scrambler. I ran a 4.2 flat.
But, you know, talking about Corral and Rodgers, let's pivot to talking about the college football season. Let's talk about our guys, you know, the guys in the state of Mississippi. I mean, you look at it, and we don't have to recap as much because obviously people around here, you know – you know, what Ole Miss, what State did this year, how the Egg Bowl went, yada, yada, yada.
We won.
Smoking on it. What about the future? What about the future for, you know, not just next year, but the upcoming future? You know, Ole Miss lost a running back coach today. That's something I don't know if y'all saw. A running back coach said in Miami. Another staffer gone. I mean, Kiffin's looking at filling out 3/4 of his staff, having 10-plus players, I think, now entering the transfer portal. You know, Ole Miss might have more turnover next year than any other team in the country.
With losing a guy like Matt Corral, who was third overall in pass yardage at 3,349 in the SEC, with only one key receiver in Dontario Drummond, and the next closest guy is Pearson, who's a walk-on from Western Kentucky, then Jerrion Ealy, a running back, as our third leading pass receptor, I'm sorry. That's hard to replace for sure.
But Kiffin's going to find he's going to find the best player on offense, and he's going to feature that offense around him. Look what he did with Blake Sims at Alabama. I'm not saying we're going 10-2 and having this season like Corral did, but he's going to adjust. He's not going to run with Altmyer the same exact offense he ran with Corral.
Right.
Like, it's going to be tweaked and to show his strengths and get away from his weakness. 2 years under Kiffin, we've ran the ball the best in the SEC. So,
yeah, had three backs over 500 yards. Counting, or is it four? It's four that rushed over 500 yards.
In my opinion, when you're talking about the future and how it looks, if I know Lane Kiffin, I know he has aces up his sleeves. Whether he's going to get his quarterback in the portal, that's only time can tell. But I think Lane Kiffin, he's good enough that he can understand that, okay, these are the guys I have. I can make something out of nothing. Coming in, you know, we have a top 25 recruiting class. I think, 60% of those recruits are on the defensive side of the football, roughly something like that. And coming in from the portal, I know we had four or five transfers. It was just specifically for the defense. And it looks like Lane Kiffin has focused on the defense, and that part of our team is going to be really, really good next year. Coming off the back half of the season where our defense won us, probably, I would say, over the last six games that we played, of the six wins we had, our defense won us four of those games at least.
And let me tell you, the player to watch next year for Ole Miss that not a lot of people are going to see coming, he's going to break out, Dannis Jackson.
I hope so. I don't know who's going to be throwing to him. That's the scariest part, and that's the iffiest part. Because, you know, I'll say it now. I'm not a Luke Altmyer fan. Everybody else on this podcast is Luke Altmyer guys. I am not. But I think
I have faith in him. He's going to bring it next year.
I'm with you, Toby. I like Altmyer. But watching the Sugar Bowl, I know he's a freshman. It's a big stage. I didn't get that it factor from Altmyer. I didn't get that fire. He almost seemed too nonchalant for me. I know it's good. He was poised, but I didn't like Matt Corral. He fought the entire Mississippi State team as a freshman. At that point, you knew he had some fire in him. I didn't sense that from Luke Altmyer. And if you play against Alabama, LSU, A&M, the SEC West, you gotta have some fire in you. I haven't caught that from Luke Altmyer. maybe he'll surprise me, but I just he don't seem like that guy to me.
Well, coming
I
off
saw
that,
him lower his.
Oh, you can finish your statement.
I saw him lower his head a couple times with some Baylor defenders. I think he's got it. I think he's got it. He might not have as much dog in him as Corral, which I don't know of anybody who does. Like you said,
right,
tried to fight the whole Mississippi State team.
I think he's got
more than what most people think.
So Chuck, you're on the bandwagon with me. We're Altmyer guys.
Yeah, they wear Ole Miss across their chest. They got my full support.
Well, I'm not saying I don't support him in a way. I want him to do good if he's our quarterback. But you know, you're talking about, you know, you haven't really seen the fire. This coming season is the season to prove it. You know, we have six games starting off that is easily winnable. You know, we go Troy, Central Arkansas, Georgia Tech, Tulsa, and then we go play Kentucky at the Vault. Like, those are five games in a row that we should come out at least 4-0. That you can really see, is he going to be the guy that's going to step up when you're playing teams that you should hang 60 on them like nothing?
Yeah, okay, you say we hang 60 on them like nothing. It's hard to replace a guy like Matt Corral. I told you he had 3,349 yards this past year. And let's see, his rushing yards, he had 614 on 152 attempts. It's hard to replace an it-factor guy like Matt Corral and expect the next guy to bring that same energy, that same poise that he had. And that's not going to happen. He's going to come out the next year and he's going to make mistakes. He's going to throw passes where he don't need to. But he's a young guy. He's just now getting some reps under his belt. He'll come out there, he'll throw an interception against like Georgia Tech, or he'll throw one against Kentucky, and people will be booing him and we'll be looking down on him. And we'll come from that, like Corral did against Arkansas when he threw five interceptions. How did he respond? That's what I'm going to see from Luke Altmyer. How will he respond from negativity? How will he come out? And I know y'all said, well, sometimes he doesn't have that it. Well, the it comes from negativity, and I want to see what happens when he experiences some.
You know, we're talking about the fire starter for Ole Miss, and there's a guy that I believe we got that fire starter. And I think really, you know, you're talking about it now is that he's kind of went under the radar, but Zach Evans transferred out of TCU coming to Ole Miss.
Right. He's legit.
Like, he is legit good. And, you know, he may be just a one-year rental, and he'll go to the NFL next year. But he is a guy that brings you the experience at running back. He brings you the safety net that Luke Altmyer needs. Now, does Luke Altmyer need a safety net? I believe he does. And I think Lane Kiffin is looking at that and saying, okay, we have the guy now that he can easily rush for 1,200 yards this year. But we have to build the team around, you know, Altmyer and him. Not really specifically on Altmyer, because right now you have your guy. You need to start building your playbook around Zach Evans. And I think
that whole running back room, too.
Here's the thing you have to think about, Toby. You know, Evans in his time at TCU has been a little bit injury prone. And also, you know, going back and watching some of TCU and seeing from what some of the, you know, what some of their fans are saying, things along that line. Evans is obviously extremely talented, one of the more talented backs in the country, I might say. But he's had a problem staying on the field both when he is hurt and also when he's not. I mean, this is a guy that only ran for 648 yards and only carried the ball 92 times this year. I do wonder a little bit about his durability. Now, obviously, Ole Miss is got a great running back room. You know, Kentrell Bullock, Henry Parrish coming back. Hopefully, you're going to be able to mitigate his carries. But that's something, you know, that I think you're going to have to watch for. Is Evans going to be able to take on the brunt carries of that number one back, like he'll need to at some points, especially in the back half of the year when you're playing LSU, Texas A&M, Mississippi State, Alabama.
Coming off that is, you know, I look at Lane Kiffin and what he's done throughout his career. He's really known for taking these guys that, you know, people may have kind of written off a little bit and turning them into superstars. I mean, we were looking at, you know, a couple years ago, was Matt Corral the guy? Lane Kiffin comes and takes over, and Matt Corral became the guy. And I think if Lane Kiffin can get him settled in and say, hey, this is your job, you have to do this, I think Zach Evans can arise to that occasion.
So, okay, now let's pivot over. Let's talk about the other team in the state for just a little bit, Mississippi State. You know, what do you see as the future?
About our little brother right now, little brother?
I've got a prediction that I don't think y'all are going to like, but let's –
They're going to be really good next year. I agree. Is that your prediction?
My prediction – here you go. Hot take, and I don't feel as good about this after the bowl game, But this is something I said after watching them this season and watching them up and down. I think Mississippi State's going to be the second best team in the West next year.
You got them over Arkansas this year?
Yes, I do.
I mean, Texas Tech begs to get differ.
A&M's going to, you know, they're still going to be figuring out their quarterback room. Ole Miss could be doing the same. You know, Ole Miss could be in a rebuilding year next year. LSU, Kelly in his first year, not sure about how that dynamic is going to work out. That's a weird hire. Auburn, I think Auburn's going to be the worst team in the conference next year, just to be completely honest with you. And that's really going to leave Arkansas and Mississippi State, my mind, battling out for that too.
Well, this is what I got to say about that. I kind of pulled up their schedule while you were talking, and Mississippi State's got a tough schedule. You know, you play Memphis early. They have them number one. But then you got to play a game at Arizona in Memphis, and then you got to go to Baton Rouge. You get an easy game in Bowling Green, but then you have to play Texas A&M, Arkansas, Kentucky, Kentucky at Kentucky. And I think if Will Rogers is going to be their guy, Mike Leach has to settle down and say, okay, what else can we do? Because these are some, from what I can see right here, these look like some teams that's got pretty good defenses. Can Will Rogers and can that offense arise to the occasion to score points and then their defense, you know, be just a little bit better to stop these other teams, you know, scoring on them?
To pivot off that, Toby, they tied with total points in the SEC with Missouri this year at 29.08. So their point scoring sort of wasn't very good towards the end of the year.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure State plays Georgia next year too.
They do. They do. They play them in Davis Wade, however. They play them late, too.
Yeah.
I will say here's one thing. Arizona is the worst team in the nation, but anyway.
I was about to say, Arizona Heat, when's that game being played?
It is September 10th at Arizona, at Arizona Stadium outside in Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah,
Arizona hasn't won a game in 4 years.
That dry heat ain't a joke.
And I hope it's an 11 a.m. game. I hope they get put in an 11 a.m. game.
Memphis will
they're not going to do that. It's going to be –
Yeah, Memphis will beat them, I think, too.
It's going to be a night game, West Coast, and they're not going to schedule an afternoon game in September in Arizona.
Well, look, here's the thing I want to say. You know, Will Rogers comes back, maybe sans Bryce Young, the most experienced quarterback in the conference. You know, young receivers have running backs, you know, that can make plays, especially catching the ball out of the backfield. You know, a defense that had a lot of young pieces this year. And, you know, I don't think the schedule is as bad as you look. Memphis, you know, I think that's a win at home. At Arizona, yes, that's in the dry heat. Arizona's one of the worst teams in the nation. That's a win. At LSU, you know, that's a game that they very much can go win. It's going to be tough. Third game of the year, though, in the Brian Kelly era, may not be completely in sync in chemistry there with a young squad, new quarterback. I think they can win that one on the road. Bowling Green, obviously win. And then you've got the pivotal point of the season for me. It's Texas A&M and Arkansas. You get both those teams at home. You go 1-1, or you even go, heck, some you say you go 2-0. But if you can just go 1-1 there, you're setting yourself up to be the second-best team in the West.
So you're saying Mississippi State is going to start the season off 7-0?
No. That's not what I'm saying.
It's not what he said at all.
That's not at all what I'm saying.
I understand what you're saying, and I think that pivot game, you know, comes with LSU at LSU, because LSU is going to get you at a night game, and it's going to be 7 o'clock in Baton Rouge, and you know how hard it is to win at 7 o'clock in Death Valley.
That's true.
No matter who you are.
You're right about that.
You could be the worst team in the – you could put the Arizona Wildcats in Death Valley at 7 o'clock. Arizona's going to fight and probably win that football game. If they were a home team is what I'm saying.
I was about to say that's – no.
Home team. Yeah, home team.
Yeah, yeah.
Or that environment.
But you're looking at – here's the road games. At Arizona, like we said, that one's, you know, LSU early. You get them early. So, you know, who knows where that game is going to be slotted and how LSU is going to be at that point. At Kentucky, not the toughest place to play. Mississippi State is, you know, traditionally has success against Kentucky. At Alabama, you're going to lose to Alabama next year anyway. I think Alabama's going to be the best team in the country. But at least that's one of your road games and not one of your home games wasted. And then you get Auburn and Georgia at home. Your last road game is at Ole Miss, which – Egg Bowl's a swing game every year. It don't matter what the records are. I really, you know, I was like, y'all, I looked at the schedule first. I was like, man, that's tough. But then you look at Auburn, who's not going to be great. Georgia, who is going to be tough, but they're going to be rebuilding on the defensive side of the ball all year next year. I think this is a schedule where Mississippi State can go win 9 games. I really do.
For that to happen, I think their red zone offense is going to have to get a lot better, and they're going to have to find somebody and just run the football, like not at least a little bit. Like they have to sniff 100 yards, like 70 to 80 range. Like in the Egg Bowl, they drive down the field on our defense, get in the red zone and stall out.
They had two backs in the top 30 in the SEC. They had Dylan Johnson with 485 on 89 attempts and Jaquavius Marks with 416 and 106 attempts. So they don't run the ball.
I just want just in case there's some State fans listening, 3 touchdowns were dropped. Just want that to set out there. Okay.
And to run the air raid, you have to have elite receivers. And I don't think State has that elite receiver. So I think for Mississippi State to have a lot of success next year, I don't know what their recruiting class looks like, whether it's receivers or not, but I feel like if State gets a big receiver, that could really help their offense a lot too, to run the offense they want to run.
I think Mississippi State in recruiting is just behind us. I think we're at 23 and they're at 25, I believe. I'm going to fact check that though.
All right, Peyton, I got a question. Go ahead, Chuck, my bad.
Yes, they're right.
No, I was just agreeing with Toby.
Okay.
Yeah,
we're at 23 and they're at 24.
I was going to ask Peyton what he thought our record was going to be next year, if he's thinking that 9 wins.
You know, when I look at us, I think you're going to be helped out. You have, in my opinion, I haven't looked at a ton of schedules, maybe the easiest 6 games in the country to start off the season.
All right, let me rephrase. And we talked about this before we got on the air, but I wanted to ask this question. Is that a 2-part question? Number one, and we've heard a lot of rumors in the past few days. Number one, the first part of the question, what will the Ole Miss Rebels record be if Lane Kiffin is the coach? And part two is, what will their record be without him the coach?
Oh, you know, that's tough. And, you know, you want to reference that saying, you know, obviously there's been some talk about Lane interviewing with the Vikings or the Giants. And, you know, I think with Lane, I think you start off – you know, 5-1, 6-0. You could start off 6-1, 7-0, because like I said, I think Auburn is going to be the worst team in the conference, and you get them at home. Now the back 5 games are going to be tough: at LSU, at Texas A&M, Alabama at home, at Arkansas, and Mississippi State. I think you're looking at next year, and y'all may flame me. I think you're looking at 2-3, 1-4 against that slate. You know, in the back half of the season.
It's a tough schedule. Tough back half.
It's one of the easiest front halves in the nation and one of the toughest back halves.
Right. You know, piggybacking off that is, I actually believe, you know, those first 6 games, I'm so happy that it's some easier games, because one, you're basically rebuilt your entire offense. So you need time to get these guys in rhythm. And one just clear thing I want to put out that is so great about this season is that you get an off week. Right after Texas A&M, you go play Texas A&M at College Station, you're off. Then you got Alabama at home. I think right there is a pivotal moment that, you know, Ole Miss can say, hey, whatever the record looks like, you got 3 huge games left. We need to prepare for those 3 huge games.
Yeah. It's like the first time in recent memory that we won't play Alabama like the first 3 weeks of the season. So it'd be nice not playing them so early in the season, have a little break before we see Alabama.
And I'm so glad we get them in Oxford, Mississippi. As that is so huge.
But hers is playing Arkansas and Fayetteville, though. That'll be tough too.
And man, and I can say this, you know, Arkansas's had our number for years, and we really finally broke that over the past couple of seasons. But man, that Ole Miss Arkansas game is always one of the best games in the whole
season. Okay, I don't know about a couple of seasons, but this past season.
This past
season ago, yeah, Corral didn't have
his
best
game. Well, for Arkansas fans, they'll say every year they love playing us because normally they beat us. But this year, you know, that Ole Miss Arkansas game, we had the luxury of being there, and the atmosphere was great, and it was one of the best college football games I can remember ever going to.
Right, exactly.
And even saying that, the Texas A&M game this year, I've never been to Vault Hemingway when it was like that, and Vault Hemingway was shaking, and it was incredible.
Yeah, but, you know, you talked about buzz. You said it playing Alabama late. I'm going to be honest. I think I'd rather catch them early. Because when you play Alabama late, you're playing them at their best. You know, you play them early. they still may be figuring things out. The only thing you might say about Plant Lea is maybe they catch the injury bug, or, you know. Well, but
play and it's usually play. Us, though, on the injury bug because all of our receivers this year.
Well, I kind of disagree with that statement, Peyton, is because if you look at Alabama this year, the first probably, what, seven games they played this year, they played really good. Then they caught Texas A&M and lost. The back three or four games they played, they didn't particularly play very well.
Like, Iron Bowl.
They won. Yes, they played good.
LSU.
Arkansas. Yeah.
But did they win, like single-handedly?
And plus, the Rebs' defense was like complete 180 towards the end of the year.
Exactly.
That's well, the improvement. Here, in the country. You come you off the worst them. Season and all of college football having the worst defense in the country, and then you come out and have a top, arguably a top 80 defense in the country. This is huge.
Well, you flip it the other way. You know, Alabama gets a bye week last week of October. They come back, play at LSU. Then they come on the road to play us. And then you get Austin Peay the next week at home, so you're not looking past Ole Miss. I think it's just wedged in a really bad part of the schedule this year.
Them goalposts are coming down this year. It's, what, 2015 all over again?
I think it was 14.
14, it was 14.
15 was when we beat them there.
Right. Yeah, I see what you did there, Toby. I like it.
Now let's talk about the you know, we were talking about it before the podcast because it kind of came out late. Lane Kiffin rumored to be possibly interviewing for the Vikings or the Giants job. You know, do y'all think there's any smoke behind these, or do you think it's, you know, all just speculation?
If Lane Kiffin is not the Ole Miss Rebels football head football coach this fall, I will let y'all shave my head. Give me a buzz cut.
I'll second
somebody. Mark it down.
That's coming from state message boards. I don't feel like none of that's true.
I'm a specialist when it comes to New York Giants. I'm a Giants fan, and I'm going to personally say this as a Giants fan. I have been a Giants fan for 23 years. Okay, long suffering. I do not want Lane Kiffin to be the head coach of the New York Giants.
Wow.
For a bunch of reasons. One is you can look at his stint. Yes, he was young, but Lane to me is a great head coach in college. His play style does not translate well to the NFL, and I do not think that he could build a Super Bowl-winning team in New York and or Minnesota.
He had the best play call in the history of the NFL, though, sending Janikowski out for a 76-yard field goal into the wind.
Hey, there's no shot he makes it if he's on the sidelines. That's all I'm saying. Hey,
you miss 100% right. of the shots you don't take, Wayne Gretzky once said, and Michael Scott.
I think these message boards are coming out to build the mysteria of who's gonna take this job, because I've actually been reading a lot that the New York Giants are really, really locked in on the Cowboys offensive coordinator. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but
that's probably
who's gonna be our head coach. Minnesota is a franchise that nobody actually cares about unless you're from Minnesota. So I mean, they gotta make something up to get you interested.
But Toby, let me ask you a question: would you be fine with Lane Kiffin being hired just so you don't have to see a quarterback sneak on 3rd and 9 from your own 4-yard line?
Okay, can I say something, man? I miss Eli Manning. I miss Tom Coughlin so bad. But, you know, you fire Judge and then Gettleman retired, but he was fired. Yeah. I think the Giants are prepared to do something. And if they offer Lane Kiffin, and, you know, I'm a Giants fan, and if Lane Kiffin goes, awesome, let's go Giants, you know, Giants pride. But my thing is I care a whole lot more about Ole Miss football than I do the New York Giants, and I want Ole Miss football to succeed before I do the New York Giants.
Yeah. At this point, though, if Lane did leave, who could Ole Miss get? Because, like, all the other coaches have already taken another job. Like, I don't feel like there's anybody else out there that we can –
this
would be a good hire.
This is what I said before the podcast started. I think you turn around and you offer Jeb Lebby the head coaching job.
Yeah, I think he'd come back for the head coaching job. I do.
With now the fate of the universe –
he's probably going to leave.
With the fate of the universe on hand, the death beam is pointed at Earth. The Martians are coming. Give me DJ Durkin.
You can keep him. I actually do.
No, I'm
miss
serious.
I hate
give Durkin.
Dark horse. Y'all ready? We said this before the podcast, too. For recruiting purposes, David Cutcliffe. Bring him back for Arch.
Ed Orgeron.
Recruit Arch.
Coach O. Give me Coach O. Now.
He's gonna be our offensive coordinator.
Bring back the national championship winner, Matt Luke.
This is where the podcast ends.
Look, in all seriousness, you look at Cutcliffe, you know, Ole Miss, another staffer that we lost today, by the way, assistant quarterback coach, Matt Holick. So you've now got a field quarterback coach. Maybe that's where Cutcliffe steps in.
Right.
But, there's been fans wanting that to happen ever since Lebby left because he was the offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach, wanting him to step in and be the quarterback coach, you know, because the Mannings have such a great relationship with Arch.
Would you be against throwing some money towards Gus Malzahn at UCF?
Yes, absolutely.
JRP's coming back, then. Cristobal says 100%.
Well, this is what I can say on it, and this is one of the last things I'm going to say, but – you know, Cristobal and 247, you know, sometimes they hit, sometimes they don't. But 247 come out top five targets for five-star quarterback Jackson Dart, you know, out of USC. And I think Lane can look at that and he could, you know, he could tell these coordinators, hey, you know, I'm getting this guy. This guy is coming to me. I need help coaching him. And I think coordinators are going to look at that and they're going to say, I need to coach this guy because this dude's going to be in the NFL. I want my name attached to him.
How good is Jackson Dart? I really don't. I've never seen him play.
Dart was very, he threw for 9 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. But the main thing was you look at USC during the second half of the season from when they started Dart versus Slovis, and I felt like that offense ran a little bit better. Yeah, it still went great, but Dart's got a lot of potential. He was a 4-star prospect coming out of Utah last year. He's just a freshman. And stepped into a role he really wasn't expecting this year. Got a pretty good arm on him, in my opinion. He can run it very well. 1,000-yard rusher, I believe, in high school senior year.
And this is what I want to say on it too, is because if Luke Altmaier's the guy, he's the guy. But you got to have somebody come up and challenge Luke Altmaier and or Jackson Dart if he does come to compete for that starting job. You can't be focused on one guy. You got to have some competition in spring camp.
And I agree. I don't dislike Luke Altmaier. Like he's talented, but I'm like you. If he's the guy, he's the guy. But I feel like there has to be an open competition at start account.
I agree.
And you got to have some depth too. Like even if you're not worried about starting competition, but like just if Altmaier unfortunately got hurt, like who is it?
Buzz Gardner is working on next year, is what I heard. Crystal Ball says 100%.
Two star out of Nettleton, correct?
That's correct.
Like, do you do what high school teams do and, like, just put Zach Evans in the Wildcat, Wild Rebel again?
That's some Hugh Freeze kind of stuff. I just think there needs to be some competition. And I'm not doubting Ole Miss. I think Lane Kiffin, he's gonna pull it together. But, you know, just overall, this year has been one of the greatest seasons I've ever watched. And I think Ole Miss has set themselves up to – same with State, that they can build on something for the future. And I think they're right there that they can – they can build a team that can compete in the West next year or 2 years from now. But whoever it is our quarterback is a placeholder for Arch.
What's our ceiling next year, y'all think?
I think
what's the ceiling?
I think ceiling is 10 wins, but you shoot for 8.
You shoot for 12.
Well,
as fans, realistically, like, I hope the players are shooting for 12. Like, that's my hope. But – I haven't looked at the schedule, but I think we go 5-1 in the first 6. I think we find a way. I think we beat. I think we beat State in the SEC. I think we beat LSU. I think we beat Auburn. So I guess that's 8. I think we get 8 wins.
I think your ceiling is 9 wins. I think your ceiling is 9. Your floor is 6.
I was about to say the floor. Probably
I think you're settling in for 7 or 8. I think so.
So 6 to 9.
And 6 to 9. Yeah, nice. I think Ole Miss, you know, they're a team, they're dogs, man. You know, Ole Miss isn't going to just lay down to you. And I think they're going to compete a lot this year, this coming season. And, you know, and you got something to build on. You got something that's going to motivate you to say, hey, we can do this. We got 10 wins before. We can do it again.
All right, guys, this is a shot in the dark, all right? But listen to this, all right? What if on October 30th, this is the day after we play A&M, we are 9-0, we go into an open date, would we have College Game Day at Oxford on that November 12th when we play Alabama?
Heck, you don't even have to ask.
Yeah. I mean, Ole Miss doesn't lose. Dollar. And if they don't,
Katy Perry has to be
the guest picker. Last year was a dud.
It was. Yeah. We were all out there. Toby left at 7:30. Respectfully,
I did not. I did not.
He did. 7:30 on the dot.
He did.
I went to the bathroom at 7:30. I didn't leave till 9 because they wouldn't let me back in.
Now listen to this. You ain't a true fan. I left and came back in. I came back in. I peed and came back in at like 9 o'clock.
Dude, well, me and Buzz, we really bonded. We stood right beside each other watching Corso, had a guy piss in a bag right next to us.
I was about to say that. I was not going to pee in a bag. I was not going to do that.
Yeah. But man.
You know, you're talking about game day. Serious thing. The most likely game I think Ole Miss has game day is against Auburn, because you look, Ole Miss could be 6-1, 6-0, 5-1 at that point. And Auburn opens up with Mercer, San Jose State, Penn State, Missouri, LSU, Georgia. If they could manage to go 5-1 that stretch, I think there's a very good chance you have game day next year.
That Penn State game is at home, right, for Auburn?
Yes, that's at home.
It's at home. And did Franklin leave Penn State?
No, he's still there.
Okay. I thought he had left, but okay. Yeah, they extended him. He has, like, that really nice contract.
Oh, yeah, he had a monster contract, one of the biggest in the nation. But we will talk about that more at a different date. But, guys, I think we're about ready to wrap this thing up for the first episode.
I'd like to make one announcement. This is solemn. I feel very heavy-hearted about this. I just want to apologize to everybody. That's a Chicago Cub fan. They've been through it all. Awful franchise.
Oh, come on.
The garbage can fire of a franchise, but we'll get into that more as we get closer to baseball season.
2016 is Mickey Mouse.
Imagine blowing a 3-1 lead at Cleveland. Ooh!
Peyton, finish this out.
Oh, man. But, guys, I hope you enjoyed this first episode. Wild. First episode over the phone, brought to you by Anchor. I want to get that shout out in there. Hopefully we'll be in person, for the rest of these episodes. We get back to school. It's going to be a great time. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you stick along. Let us know what you think. Follow us on our social media at Sports Hour Pod. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at that. But for Toby Leach, for Grady Gardner, for Buzz Gardner, and for Chuck Spencer, I'm Peyton Taylor. Thanks so long, and God bless.